This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. Working backward in the chronology of recorded music, recorded on records specifically, we've got vinyl LPs, corresponding singles known as 45s, and way back 100 or more years ago, 78s. Those records are now, as are many things that are old and rare, cherished collectibles. Amanda Petrovich writes about the 78s and the people who want them in her new book. It's called Do Not Sell at Any Price, The Wild Obsessive Hunt for the World's Rarest 78 RPM Records. Amanda, it's good to have you on.
Thanks so much, Kai. Happy to be here.
Probably ought to remind people what 78s are, right?
Sure. 78 RPM records are 10-inch grooved shellac discs that were introduced around the turn of the century, mostly phased out by the 1960s. They spun at 78 revolutions per minute, hence the name, and contain about 2 to 3 minutes of music on each side.
I offer this next question as a history guy and a person who is intrigued by this stuff, but who are the obsessives in your subtitle who are going to look for these things that are hard to store and breakable and old and stuff?
I mean, this oddball fraternity, and it is a fraternity, it's mostly men, but the ones that began to interest me in particular were sort of fervently focused, almost maniacally focused on preserving the music that was recorded to these discs. There are no metal masters from any of these early American recordings.
I'm sorry, metal, right? As in no hard masters.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so the records themselves that were pressed, we don't, you know, that's all we have. It's the only evidence we have that these songs were made. So it's a high stakes treasure hunt in a way because they're saving these songs from certain death.
How are they sold in the marketplace, if you will? I mean, do you find them on people's driveways on a Sunday afternoon garage sale? Are they specialized?
You do still hear those stories, but more often than not, they are traded either on eBay or even more frequently, sort of private trades among collectors, sometimes for astounding amounts of money. I mean, there was a very public sale recently on eBay of a record for $37,000.
Wow.
You know, and that's not uncommon.
I am obliged to point out here that you too got a little obsessed. I mean, there's a passage in this book where you talk about learning to scuba dive so you can look in like what, Lake Michigan or something for some 78s that were supposed to be sunk. I mean, hello.
Absolutely. God, I sadly, or sort of, I don't know, proudly at this point, maybe
totally.
I count myself among them.
Own it.
It did ultimately lead me to the bottom of the Milwaukee River, which is not a place I'd recommend for other scuba divers.
Put on your academician's hat here for a minute and give me the theory behind the collecting of these things, because it's a little bit like some computer guy being interested in those big old floppy disks that used to be you have to put them in computers, you know, like 20, 30 years ago.
Right. For me, it became a kind of psychological puzzle about, you know, why ownership was so important to these guys. And there is an archetype of the collector in place. I think people think of, you know, Steve Buscemi's character from Ghost World or, you know, it's not a particularly flattering stereotype. There's the sense that these are, you know, older, sort of pale and kind of doughy middle-aged men. By and large, that proved to not be entirely true. But the idea that these are men that feel in some way, you know, sort of isolated by or excluded from modernity is very much true. And I think they end up ultimately collecting these things as a way of sort of insulating themselves from that or slowing down the acceleration of culture that we see happening.
As the records become rarer and rarer, are we losing the music that's on them, or has that been digitized somehow so we can find that online in 20 years if we wanted to?
Collectors would talk to me about that often. I mean, that sense of discovery where they find some record they've never seen before, they put it on and it's, you know, it's a total masterpiece. Of course, that happens way less frequently than the thing where, you know, they find a record and they put it on and it turns out to be terrible. Not all old records are good, but there is some sense that we don't even really know what could have fallen through the cracks. The bulk of, I would say, certain canons, pre-war blues, most of those records have been found and have been digitized and are now available to buy on iTunes for 99 cents.
Of course they are, because, you know, Apple. It's a book called Do Not Sell at Any Price by Amanda Petrovich. Amanda, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Kai.